Chapter 66. Amanda. 2 months later. Amanda stepped out of the elevator of her building into the lobby. It was almost 7 in the morning, and she had only a few minutes to get to 96th Street subway station. She buttoned the coat of her business suit, and as she passed her mailbox, she noticed the little flap on the side was sticking up. It was too early for the mailman. She stopped and quickly opened the box with her key. Inside was a letter in a small manila envelope. There was no address on it, just a name. She placed it inside her jacket pocket and opened the front door to a cold January morning. Ice had compacted on the sidewalk. As she took her first step outside, her right foot slipped and she felt herself sliding, tilting. She was going to land in the dirty slush and ruin her suit. And then she was no longer falling. A strong hand had taken her elbow, and her heels skidded a few times before she regained her balance. She gazed up and saw the man who had caught her. It was Pharaoh.
"Jesus, Amanda, you shouldn't be allowed out on your own," he said with a smile.
"God, I'm sorry. Thank you."
"I was coming to see you. I heard you got a new job."
"Yeah. I'm working in a new art gallery. I'm the manager, if you can believe it. I even get to display my own work from time to time."
"That's great. Listen, I just wanted a quick word. Do you have time?"
Amanda checked her watch. "I should be getting on the subway in, like, 10 minutes.
"Come for a cup of coffee and I'll drive you to work."
"You can get to Tribeca from here faster than the subway?"
"I can if I put my siren on," he said with a smile.
"Don't worry, I'll make sure you're not late."
Amanda nodded, and they walked a block to a Starbucks. Pharaoh paid for 2 coffees, and they took the high stools at the window. Pharaoh said they were better for his back than low, hard chairs.
"I wanted to check in, see how you're doing," said Pharaoh.
Amanda took a sip of coffee. It was burning hot all the way down her throat, but she needed that warmth on a morning like this. "I'm okay. I've paid my back rent, got a new job. Things are looking up, apart from Crohn's lawsuit. That prick's still suing me." Pharaoh studied her closely for a moment, then said,
"Actually, there are a couple of things I wanted to clear up, if you don't mind."
She swallowed, took another sip of coffee, and said,
"What kind of things?"
"Well, we got a strange hit on a DNA search. You ever met a man named Frank Quinn?"
She shook her head.
"He was murdered around Thanksgiving. We think the perp got onto his property from the alley. One of our forensics teams found a spot of blood on Quinn's back wall. There were some fibers there too from black denim jeans. We could only get a partial DNA sample. The dried blood was degraded. Rain and God knows what else got on it. Not enough for scientific certainty, not enough to hold up in court. But the DNA from that blood was a partial match for your DNA. To me, it looked like somebody might have cut themselves climbing the wall. I don't suppose you could offer an explanation?"
"I've no idea. I never heard of the guy."
"It's just that the night we found Ruth after she had attacked that guard and was trying to get into Mr. Granger's apartment, when I arrived with Dr. Marin, I saw you were limping a little going up those stairs."
"I fell that morning, frosty sidewalk. Didn't have you around to save me," she said.
"The guy, Quinn, was a money launderer for the mob. He had fat stacks of cash lying around, and he was moving huge sums of money through different online accounts. He was a bad guy, Amanda. Also, he looked very similar to Patrick Travers, Ruth's first victim, and a lot like the guy Ruth was targeting that night we picked her up."
Amanda said nothing. She held her breath, watched Pharaoh as he took a sip of coffee, and stared out of the window at people passing by on the street. He said nothing for a time, and Amanda discreetly let out her breath, clasped her hands around her coffee cup to stop them shaking.
"Do you know what nickname they gave me at the precinct?"
he asked, still not looking directly at her. St. Jude, Hernandez told me once, said Amanda, trying to keep her voice level, fighting down the sick feeling that was beginning in her stomach.
Patron saint of hopeless cases, said Pharaoh,
staring idly out the window.
You know how I close most of my homicide files? I'm not smarter than any other cop. I just don't give up, ever. I feel like I owe something to those victims, and I carry it around with me. It's heavy, a burden. But I take it on, and I keep going until I break the case. Hernandez thinks I'm obsessed. She says sometimes I have to let go.
Amanda said nothing, her heart thumping in her chest. Pharaoh stared out at the street, said,
I think I might have to let this Quinn case go unsolved. He probably got caught skimming funds. The mob don't take kindly to being cheated. Your DNA being on that wall? Like I said, it was a partial match. Could be a fuck-up at the lab. I don't know.
He shook his head, then turned toward her and asked,
How is your knee?
He knows it was me, thought Amanda. He just knows. It's fine now, said Amanda finally.
Good, because it's dangerous out there on those sidewalks,
he said, glancing out of the window, then fixing her with a dead-eyed stare.
If you were to slip and fall again, I wouldn't be there to catch you next time.
Amanda said, I'm going to stay home in future. He searched her face, making sure she was telling him the truth, then nodded, said,
Come on, I'll drive you to work. There's one more piece of news. The press haven't got hold of it yet, and I wanted to be first to tell you.
Pharaoh got to his feet slowly.
Tell me what? Said Amanda, suddenly nervous again.
Crone's dead.
He's what?
A garbage man found him at 4 a.m. He'd been stripped naked and tortured. Then somebody had just thrown him into a dumpster.
Jesus Christ, she said, her heart fluttering.
There was a strong chemical smell off the body, maybe chloroform. Looks like he was drugged before someone went to work on him.
Amanda said nothing. She couldn't process it, not yet.
Just so I know, and I'm not for one second suggesting you're involved, but seeing as how his lawsuit against you is just as dead as he is, could you tell me where you were last night?
Asked Pharaoh. I was at the Dolly Parton concert. A friend of mine sent me tickets.
Which friend?
Billy. You met him that night we found Ruth?
And was Billy with you at the concert?
No, he couldn't make it. I went with a new friend from work, Abby.
Fair enough. Can't say it's a loss to the city. Hernandez found out about a half hour ago, and she's already organized a party. Come on, I'll give you that lift.
They walked a block and a half to Pharaoh's car. With each step, Amanda grew lighter. The air still felt cold, but no longer abrasive. It felt clean, new. The sun split through a chestnut tree on the corner, and for a moment, Amanda and Pharaoh were bathed in golden light. The light turned orange, red, and gold, as if it was a flame. Amanda got into the police cruiser. Pharaoh reached over to her side and opened the glove box. Inside were CD cases, most of them open and some broken and cracked. He found a case that was still closed, opened it up, and slotted the CD into the dash player. He handed the case to Ruth as the music started up. Dolly Parton's Greatest Hits. You like Dolly? She asked.
Who doesn't?
Said Pharaoh. They listened to Islands in the Stream and said nothing while Pharaoh drove her south through the city.
Have you seen Ruth since that night? She asked.
No, I suppose I'll see her at her trial. Have you been asked to attend as a witness?
No, not yet, anyway. I read about it in the paper. She really was dangerous, if all of that is true.
It looks cut and dried to me,
said Pharaoh.
The gun she had that night was registered to a former security guard named Gary Childers. Her fingerprints were on his garage door, and from what I've seen of the phone messages between them, she was coming to pay him a visit. Poor bastard. She shot him in the face with his own gun while he was watching TV.
She'll never get out again, will she?
Nope,
said Pharaoh.
She sure won't.
They fell into silence then. Amanda gazed at the track list on the back of the CD cover and fast-forwarded to one of her favorite songs. It's All Wrong, But It's All Right. They listened and hummed along, and Amanda gave him directions to the gallery. He pulled up at the curb.
Thank you for the lift, said Amanda. Thank you for everything. You've been there for me more than anyone else, and you never gave up on Jess and Louise. I'll never forget what you've done for me.
I did what any cop would do,
he said.
No, you did so much more, and you never gave up on me either.
I think you're doing just fine now. Keep it that way. I'm getting older and my back isn't gonna hold up forever. I don't suppose we'll ever really know who killed Quinn or Crone. I guess Hernandez is right. I just have to let some cases go. Take care of yourself and enjoy the new job,
he said, before speeding away. When his car had turned a corner, Amanda reached into her jacket pocket and took out the letter she'd found in her mailbox. She opened it and read it.
Dear Amanda, I hope you enjoyed the concert. My apologies, I couldn't be there, but as you will no doubt learn, I was otherwise engaged. I wanted to thank you for all your help in finding Ruth, and I wanted to return the favor. I'm sorry I lied to you. I never had a wife, never mind one who was murdered. It is my hope that you might forgive me. I already knew Ruth's real identity before I even met you, but I didn't want to draw attention to myself, you understand? I needed a buffer between me and the police, and a person that Scott would trust, someone to help cover up a few things. It was better that I had someone with me for the ride. I would like you to burn this letter, if you don't mind, after reading it, but I want you to know that before Crone died, he admitted to killing your little girl. I thought you deserved that closure. It's unlikely that we'll meet again. Good luck, and enjoy the rest of your life, sweetheart. X.
Amanda left work at 5:30, got home, picked something up, and went right back out again. She hopped on the subway, changed to the N train at Atlantic Avenue, and rode it until she hit the Stillwell Avenue station at Coney Island. She loved seaside resorts in winter. There were always few, if any, people, and there was a cold stillness to the place, as if it was sleeping, waiting for the sun. It was dark when she stepped onto the boardwalk, slippery too. Carefully, she made it to the beach and then removed her shoes. The sand was cool to the touch. Jess had loved this beach. They had come to this beach after Jess won sparkles at the fairground. Louise had made sandcastles for Jess, and they all ate ice cream together. There were no lights from the Ferris wheel behind her now as she walked out further toward the sound of the ocean, the Atlantic licking the beach. Both beach and sea were coal black in the night. Amanda sat down cross-legged, and using her hands, she scooped out a small basin in the sand. The wind was picking up, and she had to cradle the flame from her Zippo as she lit Billy's letter, then placed it in the bottom of the sand pit. Amanda took sparkles from her bag and placed the toy on top of the burning letter. The flame ignited the toy almost instantly, turning the sand around it from slate gray to gold once more. She sat for a time on the beach, warming her hands over the tiny flames, knowing she had finally crossed that great black sea. There was no one else on the beach. Amanda did not feel afraid. And she did not feel alone. The wind hurled the sea at her, but it could not touch her. It could not touch her fire, either. Whatever kind of stuffing was in that toy changed the color of the flames from time to time. The odors it gave off changed, too, For a second, but only a second, she thought she caught the faint smell of oranges. The wind brought sounds to her ears, waves curling into rolling hills and then smashing down into the water. And something else. She couldn't tell if it was the wind whispering over the boardwalk or through the sand, but she thought that in the air she could hear a child's voice, playing, laughing, happy, at peace.